Life of Joseph, Genesis chapter 39. Our theme for this series I call Trusting in Trouble. Now, obviously, I don't mean that you trust the trouble, but that you keep trusting during the trouble. And today's lesson I call Falsely Accused and Quickly Forgotten. A very tough series of episodes that Joseph had to go through. Let's remember how Joseph got down to Egypt. His brothers had captured him and had put him in a pit. And when slave traders came by, actually merchants who would deal in slave trading, they sold their brother to these Ishmaelites and Midianites, combination group, for the very purpose of getting rid of him. And young 17-year-old Joseph was taken away from his land, away from his family, away from all that he ever knew, and taken down to Egypt. You remember that we talked last week about the slave market and how he was placed on the slave market and how people were so different there in Egypt. Everything about them was different, and how Joseph, who couldn't speak the language that the people were speaking around him, he was sold as a slave to a nobleman, and we know as Potiphar, captain of the king's bodyguard. So with that in mind, let's look at the first verse of chapter 39. Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him down there. Joseph is now in a completely foreign and pagan land. The culture was different. The dress was different. The language was very different. And suddenly Joseph is expected to adapt to something unlike he'd ever been around before. The Egyptians were completely different from people in Canaan land. Most of the Egyptians were farmers. The yearly flooding of the Nile brought rich farmland to that area. And most people lived in small mud brick houses, in small villages, and they farmed. There were, however, in Egypt, three great cities. There was Thebes. There was a city called On. And On was where Ra, the sun god, was worshipped. And there was a city called Memphis. And Memphis was devoted to Aspis, the sacred bull god. Can you imagine worshipping a bull? Collectively, the Egyptians were very superstitious. They had in their culture almost 2,000 gods and goddesses whom they worshipped, including Pharaoh himself, the king, who was considered a god. The Egyptians were noted builders. They built magnificent buildings in these three cities, beautiful buildings. And you know they built the pyramids. It's said that some of the base stones of the pyramids weighed almost 15 tons each. 15 tons per stone. Egyptian builders had considerable skill in getting that kind of an object cut, moved, and placed. I'm told that even today, some of those stones that you can't even put a piece of paper between them. They're that close together. The government in Egypt was a large bureaucracy. We can identify with that. They had hundreds of officials at various levels and thousands of scribes to keep records. Sounds like the federal government. More people keeping paperwork than anything else. The upper-class Egyptians were educated. Their priests and wise men studied the heavens. They even had developed a solar calendar of 365 and a quarter days. The exact solar calendar we use today. They were worldwide famous for their skill with medicine. And you know that they devised embalming of the dead. You know about the mummies. The Egyptians were people of war. They had horses. And they had developed chariots, a new weapon of war. And their military divisions of trained soldiers filled an army that was feared in that part of the world. They were an organized and well-run society. It was a structured society. And this structure was not based on the role of the father of the family, a patriarchy, which Joseph was accustomed to. Rather, it was based on the role of the king, the Pharaoh. He was to be obeyed without any question. So all of these changes were quite a shock for this teenage Hebrew boy. He grew up in a tent. He grew up as part of a tribal society, living out in the outside country and raising sheep and planting wheat. Talk about culture shock. This was culture shocking. Joseph had to learn to adapt to this new world. Because he was a slave of a royal official, he was placed near the capital city in the estate of this nobleman. He had to learn their language and learn their ways. He was hundreds of miles from home in a totally new environment, and I'm sure he must have felt very alone. But he wasn't alone. At least not all alone. Because God was still there with him in that experience. And God was actually using that whole experience to mold Joseph. Let's continue reading the words of this section here, starting in verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him. And he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Joseph's administrative and organizing skills, which he was born with, began to show up in his life as a house slave for that Egyptian master. It became obvious that he was good. And God multiplied his efforts. So his master noticed him. And pretty soon his master actually chose Joseph to be his personal attendant, his butler, to attend him personally. And in a few years, he put Joseph as steward of his property. A steward was one who ran the property, led the property, organized whatever the master had on behalf of the master. And he became the steward of Potiphar. He was in charge of his household, all the other slaves that served in the household. He was in charge of all the farmers who worked in the farmland that Potiphar owned. He was in charge of making sure Potiphar's bank account was kept straight, that his income was watched over, that it was accurate. I mean, this 20-something-year-old young man at this point is given a whole lot of responsibility by this Egyptian master. Verse 6, it says, Joseph handled everything except lunch. Being a Hebrew, he was not allowed to dictate the food that Egyptians would eat. But everything else he controlled. He was blessed by God and fully trusted by this pagan nobleman. God even blessed this Egyptian man's estate for Joseph's sake. Now, Joseph could not see it, but these years of servitude were teaching him. First of all, he was learning how to take orders. He had come there as a pugnacious teenager, 17 years old and a little spark of rebellion in him. He was learning how to take orders. But secondly, he was learning how to give orders. He was learning how to organize people, how to lead men, how to get a job done. He was being trained for the work that in God's providence he would one day do. As William MacDonald would write, Joseph was in training for reigning. Let's continue the story back at verse 6. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused. and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. He has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or be with her. Joseph was a handsome and strong young man. He got his good looks from his mama, Rachel. The Bible had already said in Genesis that Rachel was beautiful in form and appearance, and Joseph got that side of the family. He was a good-looking fellow. And so suddenly a problem arose. Potiphar's wife was interested in having an affair with him. She made him an offer that most men would never refuse. She said, "Come have sex with me. Come have an affair with me." But out of respect for his master and out of reverence for his God, he refused. He was dealing with something that King Solomon would one day warn his own son about, centuries later. Let's look at Proverbs 23, verses 26 through 28. King Solomon would write to his own son, "My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways. For a prostitute is a deep pit, an adulteress is a narrow well. She lies in wait like a robber, and increases the traitors among mankind." Well, Joseph had had enough training by his daddy Jacob and probably his grandfather Isaac that he knew that to commit this affair would make him a traitor. He'd be a traitor to his master Potiphar, and he would actually betray his God, Yahweh. Pretty much a powerful concept for a young man to hold. And it should have been the end of it, but she kept up the temptation. She didn't ask just once. Day after day, she would approach him. Every time she could catch him alone, she'd whisper something to him. She kept up the temptation, and he kept refusing. Look what happened next. Verses 11 through 15. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left. He left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house." Well, this woman, remember, this is a very pagan society. They don't have the same morals that Hebrews would have. She literally tried to pull him into bed. I want to tell you, that's something most men would not resist. But Joseph did. This lady grabbed his garment and demanded that she and he have sex. She demanded, she said, "You're my slave too. You do what I tell you to do. Come in the bedroom." But Joseph ran. That was the only righteous thing he could do. He didn't hesitate. If he had hesitated, he would have fallen into sin. But he immediately ran away. That reminds me of a verse of Scripture that the Apostle Paul would one day write to his son in the ministry, Timothy, many centuries later. 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. Paul would say to young Timothy, "So flee youthful passions and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart." Flee youthful passions. When sexual temptation comes your way, the only thing you can do is to flee. Right then. Move away from it, or it will grip you. Your body will take over, man or woman. Your body will take over, and you will succumb to it. That's just a fact of our fallen human nature. You must move. Immediately move. Leave it right away. Change the channel. Turn the page in the magazine. Walk away from it. You've got to leave it. Change the screen on the computer, whatever. Get away from it immediately. Well, that's what Joseph did. He moved away. But that's not the end of the story. As William Shakespeare would one day write, "Hell hath no fury as a woman scorned." So Mrs. Potiphar did not take this rejection very well. She kept his garment. She made up a story. And she told a lie to the servants. And she waited for her husband to come home. And when he did, she had her lie prepared. Look at verse 16. "Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, 'The Hebrew servant whom you have brought among us came in to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house.' As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, 'This is the way your servant treated me,' his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison." When Potiphar got home, she blamed Potiphar. "Why, you brought this Hebrew into our family. You brought this young man to our house. And listen, he tried to rape me. He tried to take advantage of me when the servants were outside. Look here. Here's his garment." Of course, that was an absolute lie, wasn't it? Well, Potiphar was furious. What man wouldn't be? And Potiphar immediately had Joseph captured. Remember, he was captain of the guard. He had soldiers who worked for him. And he had Joseph captured, chained, and placed into the royal prison. As captain of the guard, he actually had overall supervision of that royal prison. Now, it's possible that the reason he did that was because he didn't really accept all that his wife told him. You see, normally, a situation like this occurring, Potiphar would just have the slave executed. He just had his throat cut there and then. But the fact that instead of killing him, which he could have legally done in their culture, he put him in jail sort of indicates that maybe Potiphar knew something about the character of his wife. She wasn't telling all the story. But Joseph, bless his heart, he tried to do the right thing. And here he is. He's stuck in jail. Stuck in prison. He was taken to what was then called the Round Tower, which was a special prison for the prisoners of the Pharaoh. It was not the regular prison that everybody else went to. This was a special one for political prisoners. And for the second time in his life, Joseph was in chains again. Can you imagine how he might have felt? Just imagine him there, sitting in a jail cell for the crime of being righteous. He had been falsely accused. He had been wrongly slandered. He had tried to honor his master. And now that very man was having him locked up. He was in a prison that was a special prison, a royal prison, from which there was no escape. Remember, the Egyptians knew how to build things. You know, he could have been pretty devastated. He could have lost his faith. He was in his mid to upper 20s now. And look at what's happened to him during his young life. He was betrayed by his family. He was essentially kidnapped by foreigners. He was sold as a slave to a pagan people in a pagan land. He had done his best to work hard and be righteous and help his master, and now here he is in a jail cell, cast aside to be punished. All he ever tried to do was do right, and everything was going wrong. He could have lost his faith in God. Would you? Would I? If we were in his shoes, if what happened to him happened to us, would we lose our faith? Could we trust God in this kind of trouble? I'm sure that sitting there in that prison, falsely accused and wrongly condemned, Joseph could have easily felt frustrated and perhaps felt again very alone. But once again, he was not all alone. God wasn't finished with this young man, so the story would continue. Let's look at verse 21. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him his steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was done in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. God was still with Joseph. I wonder if somehow he could sense that. And once again, his administrative abilities began to show themselves. The warden who worked for the captain of the guard, the warden noticed his skills. And in a short while, the warden began to give Joseph duties. Joseph did those duties well, so the warden gave him more duties. And Joseph did those duties well. And that increased, and that increased, and that increased, until eventually Joseph was running the prison. He became an inmate administrator. Everything that Joseph did became a successful idea. It worked. Made the warden look good. The warden didn't have much to do at all. He just let this unusual Hebrew young man handle the issues. And Joseph the slave, Joseph the prisoner, once again became Joseph the manager. God was still training Joseph how to lead and organize people. Well, let's move on to chapter 40, which the theme of which I call Quickly Forgotten. Chapter 40, Quickly Forgotten. First four verses. Sometime after this, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard. That's the nickname for the prison. In the prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them. They continued for some time in custody. Well, among Pharaoh's royal household and in his capacity, there are two very important positions. There's the cupbearer and there's the baker. And the reason why these are important positions is because the cupbearer gives Pharaoh his drink and the baker makes Pharaoh his baked food. And in that day and age, there was always the danger of poisoning, an assassination attempt. So the cupbearer was somebody you had to trust. You might remember that later in history, a Bible character by the name of Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king of Persia. And so that's a trusted position. The guy handing you the drink, you got to depend on him that it's not poison. The person making the bread you're going to eat, you got to depend on him that it's not poison. You have to trust those people. Well, those guys did something. We don't know what, but both of them got in trouble. And so Pharaoh threw both of them into that royal prison. And I want you to notice that the captain of the guard, who is Potiphar, who has overall supervision, the warden works for him, he assigns Joseph to take care of these two officials. You see, Potiphar still trusts Joseph to do a good job, even though Potiphar put him in jail. Yeah, wow, what a boss. So he, Potiphar assigns Joseph to take care of these two royal officials because their outcome is uncertain. We don't know what Pharaoh is going to do. Pharaoh may release them. Pharaoh may not. So while they're there, Joseph, you take care of them. And that's what Joseph does. He takes care of these two men. He sort of sees to them. They're special prisoners in this prison. And one night, something special happens. Let's look at verse 5. One night, they both dreamed, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, each with his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning and saw that they were troubled, so he asked them, Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? They said to him, we have had dreams, and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please, tell them to me. One night, these two men both had an unusual dream, a dream that related to their former work. And they were troubled by what the dream meant. Now, in that day and age, in Egypt, there were actually professional dream interpreters, people who actually would make it their business to interpret dreams, because dreams were considered omens of the future. And so on Pharaoh's staff, he had royal dream interpreters. How'd you like to have that job? Royal dream interpreters. And the baker and the cupbearer knew that if they were in the palace, they could just easily go down the hall to where the dream interpreters were and said, I had a dream last night. Please tell me what it meant. And they could get their answer. But they're not in the palace. They're in the prison. And so here they've had this unusual dream, each of them, and there's no access to the dream interpreter. Joseph cared for these men. He asked about their welfare. He noticed they were depressed, and they told him about their unusual dream and the fact that they'd had one and their frustration that there was no one to help them. And Joseph made a very powerful statement. I want you to look at verse 8 again. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph. No, excuse me, that's verse 9. They said to him, we have had dreams and there is no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. I want you to notice two things in that. First of all, Joseph still had faith in God. He had not given up on God. He knew that God was real. He knew that there was a true God. He'd been around this culture where there are 2,000 small g gods. He'd been there several years, possibly 10 years at this point. And yet he still held to the concept of the true God, Yahweh, the true universal God. And he also still considered that he was a servant of that God. The reason he said, tell the dream to me, is he's saying, I belong to that God. I serve that God. I'm a servant of the true God. Tell the dream to me. Joseph hadn't quit. He hadn't let go of his trust in God. And so they did. They did tell him. Look at starting in verse 9. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine there were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. Pharaoh's cup was in my hand. I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. He tells him the dream. Then Joseph said to him, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office. And you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly, when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness to mention me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also I've done nothing that they should put me into the pit. The cupbearer told his dream, certainly related to his job, a vine, three branches, clusters of grapes, fresh grapes. He squeezed the grapes into Pharaoh's cup and gave the cup to Pharaoh for him to have grape juice. And Joseph interpreted, 3 branches or 3 days. In 3 days' time, you will be restored to your position. Your head will be lifted up. You will be receiving your dignity back. Well, that must have made the cupbearer pretty excited. 3 days' time, he's getting out of there. But Joseph also asked for help. He said, help me get out of here. You're going to literally be standing next to Pharaoh, the closest guy in all the world, next to Pharaoh for a time. As you hand him the drink, please mention me to Pharaoh. Let him just whisper my name in his ear. Say, you know a fellow who's innocent, who's been wrongly accused. You know somebody that needs to be released from this royal prison. Mention me to Pharaoh. Give me a chance to get out of here. Well, the baker heard this conversation and he wanted his turn, so he asked Joseph to interpret his dream too. Let's look at verse 16. When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, I also had a dream. There were 3 cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket, there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. But the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. 3 baskets are 3 days. In 3 days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. On the 3rd day, this would occur. The baker wanted his turn, and he gave his dream to Joseph. Joseph told him what it meant. Wasn't exactly as exciting news as the cupbearer had received. In 3 days' time, he would be lifted up in a different way. He would have his head cut off, and the birds of the air would eat his flesh. I'm sure that he didn't appreciate that interpretation. Well, let's look at what happened as we finish the chapter, starting in verse 20. On the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. 3 days later was the king's birthday. Obviously, that was the providence dream that God had given them. And as part of the celebration, he actually pardoned a prisoner out of the prison, and it was the royal cupbearer. He got pardoned, and he was restored to his position. Great. Great for him. But things didn't go so well for the baker. As true to Egyptian custom, his head was cut off in execution, and his body was nailed to a stake as a warning to others to never offend Pharaoh. Gruesome for him. The royal cupbearer was restored. He served at Pharaoh's side. He had his freedom and his dignity back. But he seems not to have his memory, because he never mentioned Joseph to Pharaoh. He forgot all about him. And Joseph was still in that prison. And in that prison, he would stay for 2 more years. Would that have been frustrating for Joseph? Could Joseph have gotten mad about how all this turned out? He tried to help a guy, and the guy forgot him, didn't care. What would we feel like if we were in Joseph's shoes? And yet, as the story will unfold, as we continue it next week, it will become clear that Joseph never lost his faith. He never lost his faith in God. He still trusted in his trouble. I'm amazed at this young man. I really am. In fact, I'm humbled by him. I don't know if I could have been so trusting. But God was still with Joseph, and as the next chapter will show, God would bless Joseph for his trusting. God would take care of him. Because God honors people who believe in Him and who trust in Him, especially when all around them seems to be a mess. God is honored when we trust His trustfulness, His trustworthiness, His truthfulness, even when we cannot see His work around us. Tony Evans says, faith is acting like God is telling the truth. I like that. Faith is acting like God is telling the truth. Faith is acting on the truthfulness of God, even when we don't see any evidence of His promise in our lives. You see, God had given Joseph a dream too. In fact, He'd given him two dreams. And those dreams said to Joseph that he was not destined to spend his whole life in slavery, nor in prison. He was destined to rule. He was ordained for something great. And there in that prison, with no human hope of change, Joseph still trusted that God was true to His word, that God would keep His promise. Somehow, God was going to change things. Joseph clung to that. He clung to it when all around him his life seemed hopeless. He trusted in trouble. And his faith is an example to us. Trusting in trouble is the greatest trusting of all. And a great God will do great things for His beloved people who trust Him, even during those times. Let's bow for prayer. Heavenly Father, Lord, it's easy to trust You when things are rolling along doing okay. It's a different ballgame, Lord, when life seems to be a mess. But God, give us the grace to keep trusting You, to keep clinging to You, to keep believing in Your promise that You will never abandon us, that You will not forsake us, that You will see us through. Help us, Lord, to hold on to that hope, even as Joseph did so many years ago. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen. We're going to stand and sing a hymn of invitation. If there's anyone here who would like to join this church or make a decision for Christ, please come forward and talk to me.